This is Bob Damaris, broadcasting to you from West Virginia on 18 February 2006. I'm a concerned American speaking to you about the imminent destruction that our people face. If you are unwilling to act now, you are part of the problem, not part of the solution. This program was written, produced, and spoken by Robert A. Damaris, Ph.D., who is solely responsible for its content. Today's program is entitled Mexico, Hellhole of North America, Part 2, and it was recorded live without editing. In February 2006, John Negroponte, the U.S. Director of National Intelligence, told a congressional hearing that the list of six countries in which drug traffickers threaten to undermine the government include Mexico, Afghanistan, Kyrgyzstan, Myanmar, Haiti, and Jamaica. That puts Mexico in bad company. It belongs there, and it is where it has been since the days of the horsemen banditos. A week or so ago, I was talking about the lawlessness and uncivilized situation in Mexico in a program entitled Mexico, Hellhole of North America. I had intended to complete that topic, but I had to delay it to cover the more pressing problem of the Mexican versus black race riots in California jails and prisons, especially in the volatile Los Angeles area. The most important new information on the riots is that Sheriff Lee Baca is now claiming that the riot on 4 February 2006, which was ordered by the Mexican Mafia, was actually ignited by a fight between whites and blacks. Baca also claims the 4 February riot was the first riot. Actually, the first race riot was the 4 December 2005 riot and not the 4 February 2006 riot. Baca said that he will charge several whites with hate crime. He did not mention charging any of the 4,000 Mexicans and blacks with hate crime. As further update, the jail was 85% reintegrated by 16 February 2006, and privileges were restored to most prisoners. The 19th Hispanic versus Black race riot in the L.A. County Jail since 4 December 2005 occurred on 17 February 2006 and was among blacks and Hispanics who had not been involved in any of the previous riots. In fact, they were new prisoners who had been put in a day room. 40 of them battled for 20 minutes before a phalanx of guards in riot gear broke it up with tear gas. There were no serious injuries. Stay tuned for more developments. In part one of Mexico, the hellhole of North America, I talked about Acapulco. Important news continues to trickle in. The most stunning news is an interview with a Mexican gangster by the Acapulco newspaper, El Sur, parts of which were carried in the San Diego Union-Tribune on 14 February 2006. The Mexican gangster is identified as El Turbion, which translates to the shark. The shark said a major gun battle in Acapulco was just a big mistake. The gangsters had obtained permission from El Presidente Vicente Fox's Safe Mexico program to bring a vehicle convoy procedure in Acapulco, where the Sinaloa cartel has an understanding that before it brings major convoys of gunmen and drugs through the city, it must get permission. The shark said that the Acapulco police chief, Gennaro Garcia, must have thought the Colombian cartel like the Gulf with their dreaded Zeta gunmen. Perhaps when Police Chief Garcia decided to stop the convoy, he thought he was doing the right thing and was helping the Sinaloa cartel by taking out a convoy of Zeta gunmen. But apparently was a Sinaloa cartel convoy whose escort vehicles contained gunmen with machine guns and grenades strapped across their chest. It was a scene right out of a modern version of the Pancho Villa story. It was 10 o'clock in the morning on 27 January 2006 when the convoy moved down a major street in Acapulco, whose population is somewhere between 700,000 and 1.2 million. Garcia, with his personal army of bodyguards, backed by as many of Fox's federales as he could get on short notice, decided to attack the convoy. Garcia's army chased the three escort vehicles, one of which escaped. In a horrendous daylight gun battle, four gunmen were killed. Two other gunmen were wounded. Four police officers were wounded. Garcia was slightly wounded. Later that day, a small Mexican government helicopter was shot down by bandidos. The Shark was quoted as saying, quote, "Garcia screwed up. Now he has a huge problem with the cartel," unquote. Garcia may have both cartels gunning for him now. He quickly resigned as police officer and has gone into hiding. Mexico is unchanging. Its corruption is only exceeded by its incompetence. Its incompetence is only exceeded by its violence. As further update to the Acapulco story, on 7 February 2006, an attack occurred in a coastal resort city with an unpronounceable name, 120 miles north of Acapulco. At 4 o'clock in the morning, the heavily guarded home of the police chief was hit in a grenade attack. Two fragmentation grenades struck the home. One police officer who was guarding the home was injured. The attackers escaped. On 10 February 2006, near Mexico City, Luis Fernando Mendoza, the security chief of the dreaded La Palma Maximum Security Prison, was driving near the prison in a vehicle. Another vehicle packed with men using military-style weapons approached. Señor Mendoza's vehicle was hit by a grenade, rocket, or bomb, apparently fired by a grenade or rocket launcher. Mendoza lost control and crashed his vehicle, but he had suffered only minor injuries. The attackers escaped. The Mexican federales say they're going to catch these bad guys any day. On 11 February 2006, two men hurled grenades into the parking lot of the Hotel Paso Colonial in that same unpronounceable tourist city that I mentioned a minute ago. Windows were shattered and one civilian was injured by grenade fragments. The attackers escaped. On 11 February 2006, two police stations in Acapulco were attacked with grenades. At 3 o'clock in the morning, three vehicles of attackers drove by a police station in the main tourist area. The police station was hit with a fragmentation grenade. One police officer was hit by flying glass. The attackers escaped. 30 minutes later, the second assault in Acapulco occurred on a police prosecutor's station near the site where the 27 January 2006 gun battle occurred. Three vehicles drove past, and a passenger hurled a fragmentation grenade at the building. There were no injuries, just the usual damage to a building caused by a grenade. The attackers escaped. Grenade attacks on the police in Mexico are almost an everyday occurrence, but you don't hear about it in the mainstream media. Later in the program, I'll get to shootings of police chiefs that have occurred in recent days. Acapulco is located in the state of Guerrero, whose governor is Cifrano Torreblanca. Señor Torreblanca wants no part of the war with the drug cartel bandos. Like most Mexican state and local politicians, he figures that fighting the bandidos is a problem only for Fox's national government and the federales. Here is what Señor Torreblanca told the Mexican media in response to the gun battle in Acapulco and the grenade attacks on police. Quote, "I have children. I have a family. That is why I'm afraid. I am learning how to control my fear so that it does not paralyze me. A good police officer has to measure his actions. Taking a kamikaze attitude like Police Chief Garza did in this situation doesn't do anything but cost you your life. You shouldn't try to be valiant. You have to be honest and intelligent. And intelligence sometimes means that you don't get involved in federal matters. Unquote. Does this sort of cowardice and corruption shock you? Listen, gringo, get used to it. Within 20 years, California, Texas, and other states will be in nearly complete control of Mexican voters and Mexican politicians. On 17 February 2006, Governor Tory Blanchet asked for a $24 million loan to purchase machine guns and grenades. Also in Part 1, I moved north to the Rio Grande and recounted another major shootout between cartel gunmen on one side and the police and Mexican army on the other side. I talked about the admitted corruption of most police officers in Naval Laredo and how in February 2006, bandito gunmen shot up a police convoy as it entered a police station and raided a newspaper office with assault rifles and grenades. As a brief update, some U.S. newspapers ran a story today, 18 February 2006, on the lack of order in the streets. The high points of that story are, 1. One half the Naval Laredo police force was fired for complicity with the drug bandidos. 2. Federales patrol the streets in pickups. A picture with the articles shows at least four Federale gunmen in the back of a pickup. They are in military uniforms with body armor and with assault rifles held at the ready position. It is a scene right out of Haiti, Mogadishu, or Iraq. 3. The Naval Laredo police are unable to replace the 275 police officers recently fired in the latest purge. One of the few recruits available, Violeta Tobias, a 22-year-old mother, a mother of four, is typical. That is Mexico for you. Two bandito armies of elite gunmen are battling for control, and they hire fat little squaws with four children to be police officers. 4. The city is now under the military control of General Alvarado Moreno. 5. Very few American tourists visit Naval Laredo, and most of the residents do not go outside their homes after dark. Now let us continue with Part 2. Down river from Naval Laredo is Matamoros. Matamoros is across the Rio Grande from Brownsville, Texas. Being only 30 miles from the Gulf of Mexico, the Rio Grande is quite wide and deep there. In January 2006, El Presidente Vicente Fox panicked and moved an additional 200 of his Federale police force, the Federales, to Matamoros. This is nothing new. It happens all the time. In fact, in January 2005, President Fox, in a silly speech, declared the mother of all battles on drug cartels and sent legions of Federales to Matamoros and other trouble spots. None of the Federales were killed, but many were quickly corrupted by the local bandidos. The wide, deep Rio Grande doesn't stop many illegals. In fact, the deep water actually facilitates crossing. Smugglers can use the thousands of boats on the Mexican side. To counter this, the U.S. Border Patrol uses patrol boats in the river and vehicles that patrol the shore on the U.S. side. Let us detail some recent incidents. Incident number 1. On 28 December 2005, U.S. Border Patrol agents on the U.S. side of the river were arresting four illegal aliens who had crossed. Some person or persons on the Mexican side opened fire on them. No one was hit. The Border Patrol did not fire back. Incident number 2. On the night of 30 December 2005, two Border Patrol boats were moving in the river when the second of the boats came under heavy fire from rifles on the Mexican side. The boat was hit five times and a total of 20 to 25 rounds were fired. The Border Patrol didn't fire back. The attack had all the earmarks of a deliberate military ambush, according to the Border Patrol. The ambushers waited until the first boat had passed and then attacked a second. That way it took much longer for the boat, which was not attacked, to come to the aid of the attacked boat. Furthermore, the Border Patrol said it required excellent shooting to hit a moving boat five times in the middle of a river in the darkness. Whether it was soldiers, drug cartel bandidos, or just a couple of highly skilled individuals, the Mexican government is responsible to control the actions of its citizens who are firing into U.S. territory. All boat patrols were canceled for 2 days. The terrorist action worked, at least temporarily, to stop the U.S. from enforcing our border rights. Incident number three. On 4 January 2006, Border Patrol agents were on routine patrol on the U.S. side of the river in a marked Border Patrol vehicle. From south of the Rio Grande, Mexicans opened fire with a rifle or rifles, firing about 10 shots and hitting the Border Patrol vehicle with one bullet. No one was hit. The Border Patrol did not fire back. Incident number four. On 10 January 2006, as Border Patrol agents on the U.S. side were moving in to arrest drug smugglers, someone on the Mexican side opened fire. Agents believe the shots may have just been fired into the air in an attempt to frighten the agents or to alert the smugglers. The FBI is investigating these incidents. As you may recall from my previous program entitled Mexican Standoff at Neely's Crossing, in that incident, the FBI refused to investigate the actual incursion into the U.S. by a Mexican Humvee that was armed with a mounted 50 caliber machine gun. After that vehicle withdrew back to Mexico, up to 20 Mexicans pointed machine guns at U.S. law enforcement officers. Neely's Crossing is near El Paso. Matamoros is on the Gulf end of the Rio Grande River. El Paso is near the headwaters of that same great river. In February 2006, David McLemore of the Dallas Morning News reported about the epidemic of Mexican violence directed at our Border Patrol agents. The Border Patrol has an outlook over the Rio Grande River. It is a structure like a carport or a bus stop, just a roof for shade and a bulletproof glass facing the Mexican border. The Mexicans have hit it nine times with rifle fire. Except for the bulletproof glass, agents might have been killed. It has also been hit numerous times by chunks of concrete. A Border Patrol agent's windshield was shot out by a bullet while his vehicle was parked next to the shelter. On 13 January 2006, a U.S. Border Patrol agent there was hit by a chunk of concrete thrown from the Mexican side. It required 25 stitches to close the wound. That could have been your son or your sister that was disfigured. The agent could have had permanent loss of sight in that eye. In just January 2006, Mexicans committed 193 assaults on U.S. Border Patrol agents. They include physical attacks, rock throwing, trying to run down agents with vehicles, ramming agents' vehicles, and shooting at agents, including sniper attacks. The Mexicans even wrap stones in cloth, soak them in gasoline, ignite them, and throw them at our agents. Michael Chertoff and George Bush have further severely limited how Border Patrol agents can fight back. The Mexicans are getting bolder and more vicious, according to Border Patrol spokesman. The Border Patrol is one of the many agencies controlled by Mr. Chertoff. In the El Paso sector of the Border Patrol, 10% of illegal Mexicans captured have prior criminal records in the U.S. That does not count those that have prior criminal records in Mexico or who have never been caught and prosecuted. As I am preparing this program, news is breaking concerning problems in Mexico so severe that President Fox has had to personally address the situation. As you may recall from Part 1, in June 2005, Alexandro Dominguez was sworn in as police chief of Naval Array bullets 8 hours later. In Mexico, you can't be sure if a cop like Dominguez was killed by a drug cartel because he was working for another drug cartel, or killed because he was actually an honest policeman. 6 days after the killing of Police Chief Dominguez, President Fox announced yet another new program, Operation Safe Mexico. Every time Mexico gets bad publicity, Fox announces a new program, and he staffs it with his political cronies. All these programs fail miserably. You can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. On 11 February 2006, Gaspar Ramos, police chief of the state of Coahuila, was eating tacos in an all-night cafe. He was shot in the neck, but probably will survive. The attackers escaped. Coahuila is a Mexican border state southwest of San Antonio. Towns in Coahuila that many of you may have heard of include Ciudad Acuña and Piedras Negras. On 13 February 2006, Mexican media reported 4 events which occurred in that one day. Event number 1, the bodies of 3 men who had been killed execution style were found southwest of Mexico City. Event 2, in the state of Durango, 2 drug gangs had a dispute over some marijuana. They shot it out, leaving behind 6 dead. Event 3, Javier Garcia, the police chief of Sabinas Hidalgo, was walking out of City Hall when he was grabbed by numerous gunmen who escaped in at least 2 vehicles with Garcia as prisoner. Garcia's body was found minutes later next to a highway out of sound. His hands were tied behind his back. He had been shot in the back of the head, execution style. Sabinas Hidalgo has a population of 30,000 and is 80 miles south of the U.S. border of Laredo, Texas. Garcia had been police chief for only 2 weeks. Event 4. A couple hours later, Hector Elia, police chief of San Pedro Garza Garcia, was driving in his vehicle near the large city of Monterey. At least one vehicle overtook Aya's vehicle and opened fire. The attackers escaped. Numerous bullets ripped through Aya's vehicle, killing him. San Pedro Garza Garcia is a wealthy suburb of Monterey. These things happen all the time in Mexico, but you won't hear about them from the mainstream media, and you won't hear about them from your politicians. To the extent that Mexicans come to the U.S. will become like Mexico. Police chiefs being gunned down in broad daylight doesn't occur among civilized people. The only thing that I can recall like it was in the U.S. in DeKalb County, Georgia, which is the very populous county where Atlanta is located. In November of the year 2000, 2 black men were running for county sheriff. Derwin Brown defeated incumbent Sidney Dorsey. Before Sheriff-elect Brown took office, Sheriff Dorsey hired a hitman and had Brown murdered. Dorsey was convicted in 2002. Of course, we could argue that Atlanta and DeKalb County only maintain the trappings of a civilization and are devolving toward a primitive state. The day after the two police chiefs were killed, another incident occurred, this time in the Mexican border town of Nuevo Laredo. Unknown gunmen shot two bullet holes in a two-bit criminal suspect named Rolando Rodriguez, age 17, who was taken to the hospital is located near a police command post. Heavily armed gunmen stroll boldly into the hospital at 1 o'clock in the evening. They open fire on Rodriguez, killing him in a hailstorm of lead. Police found shell casings from two different calibers. It was Valentine's Day, 14 February, 2006. The Mexican is an unchanging person. No amount of money, technology, or school can change the nature of the beast. I have much more to say on the subject of the violent nature of the Mexican and the threat that he poses to the U.S., including the lack of response from President Bush, Michael Chertoff, and other politicians. Your politicians refuse to hold the Mexican government accountable for attacks that start in Mexico, and your politicians refuse to take any significant action to prevent those acts. But that will have to wait until my next program, unless that topic is delayed by a more urgent topic. Until next time, this is Bob Damaris speaking to you from West Virginia and reminding you that, to the extent that Mexicans come to the U.S. will become like Mexico. This program was recorded on 18 February 2006. Thank you.